Good afternoon. My name is Christy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Overview of National Core Indicators Dataset conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Lynn, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much, Christy. Hi, everyone that has joined our webinar this afternoon. We're just delighted to have you participating in this webinar titled Exploring Disability Datasets, Overview of the National Core Indicators webinar. This is presented by AUCD, the Association of University Centers on Disabilities, with the support through the cooperative agreement with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities at CDC. My name is Sue Lin. I'm the project director for this cooperative agreement. It is my pleasure to welcome you to this webinar. Next slide. Let me just give you a very, very brief overview of the cooperative agreement before we get the webinar started. I promise not to be long. We view the cooperative agreement as having four major areas of activities, research, technical assistance, dissemination, education. And we do that on topics that are focused on disability and health areas across the lifespan, so from birth to aging issues. We are using this cooperative agreement to work with folks around the country in various networks to implement different initiatives in disability and health. And one of the activities that we have currently taken on in July is the technical assistance that we're providing to state disability and health grantees that are funded through CDC. And this particular webinar is supported through that funding for that technical assistance. When we first started the technical assistance activities, we had met several state disability health grantees across the network of 16 of them across the country. And they had expressed a real interest in looking at epidemiological surveillance issues by combining and merging of other data sets. And one of the data sets that they were very interested in looking at was the National Core Indicators. That prompted us to talk with folks that were administrators of this National Core Indicators data set. We spoke with Chaz Mosley, who is the Associate Executive Director of the National Association of State Directors of Developmental Disability Services, as well as Sarah Tubb, who is the Senior Policy Specialist for Human Service Research Institute, HSRI, to see if they would have some time and would like the opportunity to share the information about the National Core Indicators to folks around the AUCD network, as well as disability and health grantees, about the National Core Indicators. We do have one state disability and health grantee who has worked intensely with the National Core Indicators data collection folks in their state, and that's Karen Lucan, who is at the North Carolina Office on Disability and Health. And Karen has kindly agreed to be the discussant for this this webinar to share some of her experiences. She has also brought on her colleagues, Sheely Thompson and Maria Fernandez from the North Carolina Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services, who will be also sharing their from their perspective their experience in working with this data set and other sort of quality management issues surrounding individuals with disabilities that were being collected from this data set. And then they will be available for question and answer at the end of their presentation. Let me just provide you with pictures, and I apologize that I do not have pictures of Sheely or Maria to share, but Chaz, Sarah, and Karen had provided us with their pictures to give you a visual image of your presenters this afternoon. I want to just conclude my section very quickly by letting you know some of the webinar guidelines for this afternoon. As the operator has mentioned, all of your lines are muted during the presentation. The operator will facilitate the question-answer period and provide you with instructions about how you may unmute your line to give your question. However, through the webinar interface, I wanted to point out that you may also text in your questions. We know that as the presentation continues on, you may have questions that are at the coming up at the moment, and we want to make sure we capture those questions. So please do go to the question box at the using the GoToWebinar interface and submit your question to us that way, and we will be sure to share those with the presenters and discussants this afternoon. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close out my section and turn it over at this time to Chaz and Sarah to give the overview on the National Core Indicators data set. So Chaz, Sarah?
Okay, fine. I'll go ahead and start, and then Sarah is going to jump in just a few slides down the road. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. I assume that you're looking at the overview of National Core Indicators data set, which is slide 7, I believe. If you turn to the next slide, highlighting measurement, and I apologize to those of you on the call because I am in an airport, and hopefully the additional information and flight status won't be too loud. The National Core Indicators were launched in 1997 as an interstate collaborative venture to assist states in measuring and tracking performance of state DD agencies. As some of you may recall, in the mid-1990s, there was a real strong push in the Clinton administration to develop a national healthcare system, and part of that was to revamp and revise the long-term support system as well. And as a part of that effort, there was a strong interest among states and within states concerning managed care approaches to long-term services. In the process of assessing managed care, many states were realizing that they really did not have good performance indicators that gave data not only about the outputs, the increases in numbers of services and types, but about the actual results of those services, the outcomes of those services on individuals receiving support and the system as a whole. The initiative was led by NASDVDS and HSRI and began with a discussion with seven states who agreed to be guinea pigs to step forward and try out some performance indicators to give them more accurate and complete data on the nature of services that were being furnished to folks throughout the country, data that they could use to argue their points in the legislature or with their governor's office, with advocates, with anyone. 60 candidate performance indicators were selected, next slide, to use as a basis to begin on the measurement process. As I mentioned, the purpose and goals were really to establish a nationally recognized set of database governmental performance measures to document and track service outcomes for DD systems over time, and to develop reliable data collection methods and tools that would enable states to assess their services against those in neighboring states. The emphasis on database performance measures within government has only increased over the years, and now several parts of government, and probably a lot of you are aware of the different activities that are taking place, everything from corrections to substance abuse to mental health and other services and supports. Next slide. From its beginnings in 1997, the number of states participating in the program has grown fairly steadily over the years. And as you can see from the picture of the NCI participating states, 2008-2009, we have a pretty broad cross-section of large and small, from Texas to Vermont, and fairly urban, such as New York, to pretty rural states, such as Wyoming and South Dakota. The measure has been really helpful at giving us information on what kind of data state and agencies need on services. Next slide. The number of participating states is up to about 30 right now, We have a couple of exceptions. In California, we've got some regional centers participating. As some of you know, the size of the regional centers in California is larger than several of the states in the country. In Ohio, is experimenting with gathering data, or will be in the near future, through some of their counties, as well as their committees of government, councils of government, excuse me. Next slide. Program structure. The National Core Indicators, as I mentioned, is a collaborative between the two organizations, National Association of State ED Directors and Human Services Research Institute. The program itself receives general oversight by the association's research committee. The committee is made up of about six state agency directors or key staff and four persons with a great deal of expertise in the field, noted researchers who are familiar with the National Core Indicators and provide really excellent advice and support to the project on a fairly ongoing basis. Some of the non-NASDAQ members that are on the committee include Val Bradley, who's the president of HSRI, as well as Charlie Lakin, Rick Hemp from the Coleman Institute at the University of Colorado, and Bill Kiernan from ICI UMass Boston. The committee provides, as I mentioned, general oversight policy direction and helps develop a number of key policy statements. For example, right now we're working to revise and expand our research policy, the policy that kind of guides our efforts to make data available to individuals from usage and from other universities and others who are interested in using the National Core Indicators data for research purposes. We now have over 14 years' worth of data, over, I think it's about 12,000 individuals nationwide. It's probably the richest source of information on the impact of services for individuals with disabilities in the U.S. at least. Human Service Research Institute provides the data analysis, the technical assistance, and direct support to state agencies in their efforts to gather the information and report it on a regular basis to us. And as Sarah will describe, we crunch the numbers and get the data back to them and also produce the reports. The program itself is made up of an operation committee, which is itself comprises participating state representatives. Each of the 30 states plus the sub-state entities has a seat at the table on the operations committee, and their job is really to focus on implementation issues and to take steps necessary to, if we're going to be changing any of the survey tools. This past year we made some changes in the consumer survey, and the committee will be involved in additional efforts in the upcoming years on the family survey. Also, there are several ad hoc committees that focus in specifically on the various survey issues, consumer survey, family survey, or the other ones. The project itself is funded by each of the participating states. Each state contributes an amount to the association and HSRI to crunch the numbers and to organize all of the reporting procedures. Each state incurs additional costs to have individuals from USAID in many cases interview individuals who are receiving support, family members, and assist in the data collection. Now we're on slide 14, I believe. NCIA produces systems-level data on individual and family quality of life and system performance indicators. One component of the state quality, really becomes one very important component of state quality management and quality improvement systems. One state that we were recently involved with, we performed an assessment of the validity and reliability of their QA system. This state had a tiered, what did they call it, a multi-level tiered system, and the NCI provided data for one of their tiers in their quality management system. It basically was included with other QI data and annual reports, strategic planning, And states really like it because it measures not only the state level indicators, but also in some states, the both county and provider level detail, so that states can get a better handle on the changes and positive outcomes and negative outcomes that might be happening in counties and providers. Next slide. The various data sources really begin with the consumer survey, which kind of is the heart of the National Core Indicators process. And that's an in-person interview with individuals with developmental disabilities. The family, there are three family surveys, and they're conducted via mail. An adult family survey for the families of individuals who have an adult with developmental disabilities living in a family home. And this is one group of individuals that we're spending more focus on these days. Some of the most recent data coming out of the University of Minnesota from Charlie Lincoln's shop suggests that about 55 to 57% of all individuals receiving UD services reside in a family home. And we're becoming increasingly aware of the need to focus services on that aspect of service delivery. The Family Guardian Survey is sent to family members of individuals who live out of the homes. And then there's the Child Family Survey for kids 18 and under who live at home. And those are surveys of the family members, not of the recipients of services. There's a provider survey that looks at staff turnover rates and stability and the representation of consumers and families on provider agency boards, and systems data, which focuses on incidence and mortality. Next slide. What information does NCI provide? The indicators focus on individual characteristics. They provide detailed information about the service locations, the activities that people engage in during the day, and the nature of the experiences that people have with their services and supports. Last year, the Institute on Community Integration at the University of Minnesota did a study using National Core Indicators data in six states to really identify differences in the experiences of individuals living in ICFMR programs with those who are living in the family home and those who are living in traditional homes. Differences in areas such as loneliness, such as the amount of choice that they are able to exert in their home settings. Next slide. Measures also assess consumer and personal outcomes in the areas of employment, community inclusion, choice and decision-making, and relationships. Next slide. Also, the system performance, as I mentioned, looks at service coordination, the extent to which people are able to utilize and access service, and the financial level of support in each of the various states. And finally, family indicators that focus in on areas such as information and planning, choice and control, the extent to which family members feel that they do have choice in the hiring of staff, as well as a whole wide range of program planning areas, access and support delivery, community connections, involvement, satisfaction, and family outcomes. As I mentioned, the uniqueness of the data is the extent to which it really allows one to drill down into the content of services and the impact of those services on the individuals themselves. Sarah, I'm going to hand this over to you at this point.
Okay, thanks, Chaz. Okay, so on the next slide, we're going to get into talking a little bit more about the actual data analysis. One of the key things that we do in terms of methodology is we perform an outcome adjustment or risk adjustment process on just the consumer survey data. And the reason we do this is to essentially level the playing field across states when we compare state to state findings. And what it does is it takes into account differences in the individual characteristics of the people in the various state samples. So we look at things like demographic variables like age and gender, other types of of diagnoses or disabilities, the extent of mobility a person has, and various behavioral support needs. Those are some examples of the factors that we use to do this sort of risk adjustment. Next slide. I want to talk in a little more detail about the consumer survey, which is, as Chaz mentioned, sort of the primary vehicle for collecting data on individual experiences. It is a standardized tool. It's a face-to-face survey that's done with individuals receiving services. It is only for adults at this time, and we define that as age 18 and over. We don't have any pre-screening procedures, meaning basically the principle is that everybody is who's selected into the sample is offered an opportunity to participate in the survey. Of course, not everyone is able to communicate in a way that would allow them to participate in the survey, and typically we have a response rate somewhere around 60 to 65%. People are able to respond to the survey. It is divided into two different sections. That last bullet there should say only the individual can answer part one. We have a part one and part two. And part one are more subjective questions, and those were determined by the committee that created the survey, that only individuals should be able to respond to those questions. However, in Section 2, those are slightly more factual or objective questions, and those can be answered by a proxy, somebody who knows the individual well, if the individual is not able to respond. And overall, the survey takes about 45 to 50 minutes on average. Next slide. This past year, we spent a good deal of time revising the tool. Over the past several years, we really hadn't made any major changes, mainly because we didn't want to disturb the ability to compare results from one year to another. But we really found it needed some updating. So the major areas that we made changes in were around health indicators. So this call is actually very timely, and I hope you'll be interested in the indicators that we added. There's also more of a focus on self-determination, some expanded elements in the community inclusion items, some richer data on employment and other activities that people do during the day, and also sort of a technical improvement. We developed a web-based data entry system that states can use to enter the data online, and it has many bells and whistles that actually will help us reduce the time it takes to clean the data and hopefully improve the quality of the data. On the next slide, it's a little bit, the type is small, but I wanted to make sure that you had access to this information. We were fortunate to be able to work with the New England states who had actually received a grant, a systems change grant, to develop some more in-depth health indicators related to NCI. And so we did actually, we worked with the states to research different health measures that could be linked to general population data, and also, you know, of particular interest to people with disabilities. And we did a survey of all the NCI states to rate the different measures. Anyway, through this process, we were able to come up with some new health items that we were able to add to the survey. The ones that are in the lighter bluish-purple color are the new ones, or a revised measure from an old question. You'll see in looking at these that many of them are similar in wording to items on the BRFIS tool, We try to really stick with that and use CDC definitions wherever possible. We also were fortunate to be able to build on some of the earlier work done by the North Carolina folks, and you'll hear about their efforts later in this presentation. And we were able to use some of the work that they had done on these questions as well. Then the very last two questions are direct interview questions. The remaining ones, most of them are in the background. We have a background information section of the survey that's not collected through direct interview, but more often through record review. Okay, the next slide. And actually, then we'll go right to the next one. I wanted to share with you just a sort of sampling of data findings. We have really massive amounts of data, but I tried to just pick out some of the health findings that I thought would be of interest. These data are from 2006-2007 and the Adult Consumer Survey. We had just over 12,000 people in the combined sample of 19 states and one regional center in California. As Chaz mentioned, we are particularly interested these days in what is happening for individuals who are living at home with their families. This is a growing population, and it's, according to the recent statistics, over half of the people, I think about 60% of people with developmental disabilities are estimated to be living at home with their families. So this is a segment of the population that we're very interested in knowing about. So what we did is we looked at some of the health results across different settings. And if you go to the next slide, what we found is that people who live at home with their family are less likely to have access to some basic health healthcare exams than people in other settings. So they're less likely to have had a physical exam. Women are less likely to have had a gynecological exam, and people overall are less likely to have been to the dentist in the past 6 months. And the next slide actually shows you graphically the detail here, and you can see that the black bar represents the people living at home with a parent or relative, and in all cases it's the lowest percentage. On the next slide, this actually is from an analysis we did several years ago where we looked at access not just by residence but by race, and you'll see another interesting finding that when we looked at people who were identified as white versus non-white, the access to the same basic health care exams was much lower for people in the non-white category. So again, this tells us some important information to think about in terms of policy development. On the next slide, actually the next couple slides I'm going to be showing you are related to an analysis we did recently looking at New England states versus other states. Yes, we are located in New England, but this was for a presentation in New England, and they were interested in this comparison. So for the consumer survey data, it includes four New England states, and the adult family survey data includes three New England states. On the first slide, the next slide is a chart showing the percentage of people who had a physical exam in the past year. The New England states are in green and the other states are in blue. Fairly high for both, but a little higher in New England. Next slide. Similarly for dental visit, having been to the dentist in the last 6 months, it was 61% in New England and 46% in other states. This is obviously an issue that's of concern in a lot of states. It's difficult in a lot of places to find dentists who accept Medicaid. I think in New England we're fortunate to have probably better health care access than in other places in the country, more rural areas. You can see there's quite a discrepancy there. And then the next slide shows information from the adult family survey data. And there's a question on there that asks families to report whether their family member's day and employment setting is a healthy and safe environment. And this is the percentage of people who said that they rated it as the always or usually feel that it's a healthy or safe environment. And fairly similar for all the states, 84% to 88%. Next, I want to talk just for a couple minutes about how states are using the results of this information. Chaz gave a couple of examples, and on the next slide, some of the ways the states use the information is in strategic planning and program and policy development. The second way, and it's becoming more and more important, is responding to CMS requirements for effective quality management strategies. So as states are more and more utilizing waiver services, they are now having to respond to CMS and provide evidence of effective quality management. And many of the NCI states are now using some of the NCI data to provide that evidence to CMS. Setting quality improvement priorities. Many states have quality improvement committees, quality councils that involve various stakeholders, consumers and families, where they're able to actually review the information and make recommendations to the state. And it's a nice way to use that sort of feedback loop to help the state figure out what to prioritize, what to focus on in their quality improvement initiatives. Building budget requests, this is obviously important, especially in these tough times, to provide information to legislatures about what are key areas that states need to be looking at future, and also looking at important individual and systems data, so things like incident rates and mortality rates. And then the next slide, a couple examples. Washington State is one of the states that uses the consumer survey as a major component of their waiver review process. They've added several questions that are specific to waiver services, things like around service planning and participation in the development of your. They also have developed a nice partnership with their DD Council, which sponsors an advisory group that gets together every year and looks at the results of the NCI data and makes recommendations back to the state. Next slide. Arizona is another example of a state. They're one of the original field test states. They were able to respond to one of their findings early on in the data. They noticed that women's health care outcomes were very poor. They were seeing an annual rate of about 30% of women getting their annual exams. And so they implemented a process to help educate people, educate staff, educate families about the need to get women to access to these healthcare appointments, and they were able to see a change, an increase of up to 70% of women getting their annual health exams. And this is an example of how asking the questions it's important for performance measurement, but it also has the added impact of really raising awareness. So one of the things that Arizona noted was they had a policy in place that people were able to choose their service coordinators or change their service coordinators if they wanted to. They found out in asking the questions that most people didn't know that they were allowed to do that. And so on the next slide, you'll see they actually had such a small rate in 1998 of 5% of consumers who reported that they chose their own case manager. They really focused efforts to help develop more flexible case management and to let people know about the ability to change service coordinators. And as they tracked improvement over the years now, or more recently in 2005 to 2006, 64% of people were reporting that they were able to choose their case manager. Okay, let me try to speed along here so we can get to the other presentation. So where to find NCI data? The major portal for our data reports is on our website. It's www.nationalcoreindicators.org. And if you go to the reports section, you'll find all of our reports organized by the type of data source and the year. And all of those reports include state-by-state results and averages across states. We also have some data briefs that we produce from time to time on special topics. The most recent one is on autism. And there are a number of journal articles that have been published. Those are also listed on the reports page. And then the next slide, there are a couple of ways to access these data sets if you are interested. The basic policy is that the states who collect the data own the data. It's not owned by HSRI or NASDAQ, but we do manage the data warehouse, if you will. And we, after we do the cleaning process, we do provide the information back to states if they request the clean data file. So states all have access to their own data. So one way is to contact the state person, the state NCI coordinator, for access to the data. States also have the ability to generate charts online. There's a special feature on the website that they have access to. It's just for consumer survey data at this time. We also have a process where you can submit a request to us for a de-identified limited data set, and you would just include a brief description of how you would like to use the data. We'll review the proposal and get release approval from states to release the data, and we have a data use agreement and policy that we have. So that is, in a nutshell, our overview of NCI. Again, our website, on the next slide, our website is with, it's nationalcoreindicators.org. And email addresses for Chaz and myself and my other colleagues at HSRI are listed there as well. And I am going to turn it over to our colleagues in North Carolina.
Thank you. This is Karen. We'll go to the next slide. And what Sheely and I wanted to do was give you an overview of North Carolina's history with the Core Indicators Project and how we at our Office on Disability and Health have become involved with this project and data set and use it to advance our work looking at health disparities. So I'll let Sheely give you some background on the Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services. Next slide.
Yes, this is Sheely Thompson. The North Carolina Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services has a quality management team that is, manages the Core Indicators Project for our division and for our state. And this this team is responsible for using data both at the state level and at the local level and encouraging the use of it by our partners for planning and improvement. We have a three-year state plan, and each LME, our local intermediaries have, which are like county agencies, have a annual local needs assessment plan and strategic plan, and we encourage the use of data for that purpose. We also have performance measures that we are responsible for with each of our local partners. And then we manage both the analysis of administrative data, including fee-for-service claims data, and projects such as core indicators. So we are responsible for collecting information on consumer outcomes and consumers' perceptions of services, both for the developmental disabilities consumers and also for our mental health and substance abuse consumers. And core indicators falls under that that piece of our work. So we have, I'm going to let Maria Fernandez talk about the project. She is the project coordinator for core indicators, and she can talk more about what we do with the data and where we are, have been doing it, so forth.
We analyze the status of contract with the University of North Carolina Center for Development and Learning to collect the data and supervise the interviewers who are consumers or family members, advocates, and professional staff. The state does the analysis at the statewide level. This is different from the one that HSRI does. And we also analyze the data at the local management entity level and distribute them to them. We're currently in the process of distributing the data from the last data collection process. Now, we don't do the outcome adjustment. We confine our data analysis to the raw frequencies. And I think that's basically it.
Karen, you want to talk about...
Sure. We'll go to the next slide, which is an overview of our office. There are basically three partners, as we've said, very involved in this work: the Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse, our office, which is one of the 16 states funded by CDC to address health disparities, and our office is a partnership between the Division of Public Health and the university system. Next slide, and then the AUCD program in our state, the Clinical Center for Development and Learning, which is based here at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Next slide. And so I think what Sheely and Maria were giving you was some background on how they use the core indicators, both to look at individual consumers and then provide reports to state government and, most importantly, the General Assembly. Next slide. I didn't know if you wanted to say anything, Sheely, about the current sample size on slide 45.
Actually it's lower than this, Karen, but we do want to ask each local management entity to complete about 40 consent and pre-survey forms so that we will have a large enough sample to do site-specific analysis.
Okay. So the goal is to continue to increase the sample size, and by doing that over time, we'll be able to get some site-specific information.
Yes.
Next slide. I think this matches some of what Sarah had explained, the different types of survey. I didn't know if, Maria, you wanted to say anything about the new use of the adult survey or the planned use of the children's survey.
The planned use? We will be mailing this to the children's family survey to the parents or legal guardians of consumers younger than 8. I mean, this is the first time that we're doing this.
So it's a new component to what data sets we'll have in the future.
Uh-huh.
Okay, next slide. What's important, I think, is to get some sense of how we came to our partnership. And our state office, particularly in our strong link to the Division of Public Health, has a very strong focus on surveillance and public health data sets. And we were aware, as Sarah had mentioned that the BRFIS does not provide information about the health status of persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so in 1999, our office formed a partnership with the Division of Mental Health, DD, and Substance Abuse and the Center for Development and Learning to look at a mechanism where we could begin to collect some of that baseline and health-related data. And so the strategy that was selected was to look at BRFIS topics, leading health indicators and questions, and begin to develop a health addendum at that point, adding some health-specific questions to the North Carolina survey. As Sarah's mentioned, the national survey has expanded so that many of those questions are now included on a national survey basis. Next slide. So we have very much worked from the BRFIS as the core to determine what the needed questions might be, and are particularly interested in broad demographics, overall health status, the health conditions, access to health care, and the health risk behavior, so that we can do comparisons among different population groups. Next slide. This slide is just intended to give you an example of some work we're currently doing is a crosswalk on the annual BRFIS and core indicator survey so that we can be lining questions and time frames up as reasonably as possible and looking at a broad array of leading health indicators. So there are a number of potential items that can be addressed through the core indicators, we feel, not necessarily in the same depth that the BRFIS survey does in terms of what's reasonable for the respondent. Next slide. Some of our findings match, I think, what many of you know or what's documented clearly in various reports from HSRI and from our state, that adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities have the same or greater health risk as the general population. The importance of having documented findings are it enables us and other partners to target very specific areas of concern, such as a sedentary lifestyle, obesity, mammography screening, access to dental care. So we have actually used the data in our state to help us determine what are some of the initiatives that are most needed for the work of our Office on Disability and Health. It also then allows us to begin dialogues with other public health and healthcare partners with documented evidence of the degree of disparities that are faced by individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Also, the comment that Sarah made about families often having lesser ability, it seems, to access different services is something we were finding in other areas of our work. It then allows us to begin to think very purposefully about what sort of outreach initiatives should we be building into specific topics of concern so that we're meeting the needs of consumers wherever they might be living. So that's an increased area of focus for us also. And it also allows us to make comparisons with persons with disabilities, without disabilities, and then specifically persons with developmental disabilities receiving state-supported services. Next slide. And lastly, in this past year, we formed a new surveillance work group bringing together some of our key partners, the State Division, CDL, our office, the Center for Women's Health Research, who does a women's health report card, so that we can begin to understand each other's work, data sources, the methods for collecting data, and begin to think about what types of products are needed by our stakeholders, such as understanding what is BRFIS or what is the Core Indicators Project, and beginning to look at some development of shared projects and emerging areas of interest that we need to keep each other informed about. So the project has been very influential in the work of our state, and I think there's a lot of potential for where we plan to be going, both with the actual core indicators data and then the partnerships involved in making it happen. The last slide has contact information for Sheely and myself. And I'll stop at this point.
Great. This is Sue. Thank you so much to Karen, Sheely, Maria, Chaz, and Sarah. Christy, we're now ready to start the question and answer period. can you provide instructions to the participants on how they may pose their questions to the presenters?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
Christy, this is Sue. Do we have any takers at this point?
Your first question comes from the line of Peter DeGroix.
Yeah, my question is, in Michigan, we don't participate in the Core Indicators Project, at least our state mental health and developmental disabilities program doesn't. So I guess I would need to know something about the process to get that started and the costs involved, and how would I go about finding out that information.
Well, I might just jump in if you can hear me okay. This is Chaz Mosley. Mm-hmm. The process is pretty straightforward. You basically either contact Sarah or myself, and probably would want to, well, definitely would want to talk to your state director of DD services, which is Mike Head in Michigan. To get their perspective on the core indicators and how they might see it working. We have arranged a number of conference calls with states and with other entities within states, such as the DD Councils that Sarah was talking about in Washington, on to increase collaboration around the national core indicators. So that would be a good place to start.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Kay DeGarmo.
Yes, I had a similar question. I do want to know, is there a cost for states for participation up front?
This is Chaz again. Sarah, please jump in. There is a cost, the annual cost to states for the use for the support from HSRI and NASDIS and for crunching the data and whatnot is, this year it's $12,492. It is indexed to inflation, so it might go up by the cost of living, a little more by the cost of living each year. But those aren't all of the costs. That's just basically for the data analysis itself. Additional costs really depend on the surveys that you collect, and there are the consumer survey is probably the most impactful on cost. And Sarah, I'm going to hand this over to you. It looks like I'm going to have to go jump on a plane, so I will say goodbye to everybody. And Sarah, if you could finish
sure.
off, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, have a good flight.
Thanks.
As Chaz was saying, it really depends on how states administer the survey. Some states will use internal quality assurance staff. Some states use a combination of, and this is for the consumer survey, the face-to-face interview, which is the most resource-intensive activity. Some states will use a contract to a university to coordinate the surveys. So they might use students, they might use volunteers, they might use family members. It's really a wide range of how states actually implement the survey administration, and that really impacts the cost.
Yeah. And Sarah, in North Carolina, we use a combination. The case managers enter, or service providers enter data for the background information, and we contract with a university to collect the data and supervise train the interviewers and supervise them, hire them, pay them, and so on. and that's at a cost of, well, we paid, I think, $166,000 either last year, and we collected about 970 interviews.
And that's helpful. That gives me a ballpark. Thank you.
Christy, this is Sue. Do we have any other questions at this time?
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. We do have some questions that were texted in, and our project specialist, Carla Kometz, is going to provide you with those questions. Carla?
Sure. The first one we received is, will the new health items be used by all participating states?
This is Sarah. Yes, they will be. They're currently being used for the 2008-2009 data collection cycle.
Thank you. The next question is, this comes from Hawaii. We are very concerned about our low percentage of women receiving an annual gynecological exam. I'm very interested in what states have done to increase this utilization.
This is Karen in North Carolina. As a result of the BRFIS and CORE indicators data, we developed a reproductive health education curriculum called Women Be Healthy, specifically to provide women with developmental disabilities information about recommended breast health and cervical cancer screenings and to gather more information about preparation for doctor's appointments. So we would be glad to share that information with you as one of the interventions we use directly related to the data.
Thank you. And then one last question. Can we see the map of the 32 states working with the HSRI? And we can go back to that slide.
We can go back to that slide. And also I wanted to let everyone know that we are going to be archiving the presentation materials as well as we have an audio archive of the webinar that will be posted on the AUCD website after this webinar. Christy, just wanted to double check with you. Do we have any other questions that you have that have queued to you about?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, let me just go ahead and close at this time. I want to thank again to our presenters, Sarah Tubb, Chaz Mosley, Chaz from NASDDDS, and Sarah from HSRI, as well to the North Carolina folks, Sheely Thompson and Maria Fernandez from the North Carolina Division of Mental Health, Developmental Disabilities, and Substance Abuse Services. And finally, to Karen Lucan from the North Carolina Office on Disability and Health. I also want to thank the participants for taking your time in the afternoon to be with us and to hear about this information. We'll have future webinars on disability and health and hope you will join us then. I want to also let folks know that there is a survey that we would like you, a very short survey, five-question survey, that we would like you to complete right after you exit the webinar to provide staff here at AUCD some feedback and input on how we organize webinars in the future. So if there are no questions at this time, then I'm going to go ahead and close. Thank you so much again, and hopefully you will participate on our future webinars. Thank you so much.
This concludes today's the overview of National CORE Indicators Data Set conference call. You may now disconnect.